Hello, good listeners. This episode comes with a warning. In this episode, we'll be discussing addiction and a few topics around addiction that cover off a variety of things. If you're a younger person and you know that you're not meant to be listening to this because your parents have asked you not to discuss those things or go into those things, then I ask you to not pay attention to either this episode or the part that we talk about in the Tips for Young Bucks. If you do want to listen, be mindful that some of the stuff might be beyond what you know and understand at the moment. However, it won't be that in-depth that you'll be hugely offended by it. You have been warned. Thank you. Welcome to episode number 27 of the Beards and Bulldust podcast. My name is Scott, and we have with us today Aiden.
Hello.
I try to make that a little bit different. Save co-hosts and stuff like that. Make you feel like a special guest.
Wow.
Didn't work. Okay. On to the events of last week. Really wasn't much. It's a pretty uneventful week, really.
Yeah.
For most things. Usual world things at play, but for most things, it was pretty quiet. Pretty quiet for us, that's for sure.
Yeah.
School was quiet.
Yeah. I've had a couple exams.
Yeah.
Assignments coming in next week and it's not a huge thing.
Yep. Okay. Yeah, it's not a massive thing. Not the end of the world, that's for sure. I guess the only thing up that I've been doing is my recording of my lap steel. So I've been doing that. I decided to start recording every day. Do about 20 or 30 minutes, sometimes 15 minutes. Just to build up some of my recordings, because I've been playing for a year now, 2 years, probably 2 years now, 1.5 years maybe, something like that, and I've not recorded any of it. I've just been playing and messing with sounds and stuff like that, and I've just decided, well, I'm going to start recording it, because otherwise I forget what I've played the week before. So I've done that, and from one of the recent sessions I did, I decided that one of the tracks I recorded pretty well as an entirety, just off the cuff, actually sounded pretty good. So that is now on the SoundCloud. I am on the SoundCloud. Like all of the teenage rappers and stuff that are on the SoundCloud, I'm on there as well. So you can look me up. I put it on my story on my Instagram if you want to see that and be part of whatever the SoundCloud community is. I don't fucking know. I really don't know. I just got no other means of recording it, and I don't want to go and put it or try and put it on any other medium because it's just all too freaking hard. So I'm just going to start there and put my stuff on there, and I think it seems okay, I guess.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. Last thing I listened to was a recording from NASA of a star. That was the last thing I listened to on SoundCloud.
No.
That was the excitement. I couldn't find anything else of interest, not even any of the music. Listening to a star making noises billions and billions and billions of miles away was actually better than most of the other shit that was on there. But now I'm on there, so you can find me, or not, whatever. I'll just keep putting stuff up there anyway, like I normally do. Moving on, anything from the old lady update? You seen the poor old lady? Sweet.
Yeah, I saw her this week.
Oh, good.
She was sitting outside. She had a mask on still.
Jeez. She's seriously worried about the Rona.
I mean, it's kind of understandable. Mm. She's like,
maybe she's had her lips done. She doesn't want to show anybody.
Maybe. I doubt that she just went out of, like, even her front yard. But yeah, I saw her, so she's...
She's okay. She's alive.
Yep.
You wave or anything?
No.
No, you're not.
She just kind of stares at me. She's, like, intimidating. I'm just like...
You're intimidating.
I'm just going to look down and keep walking.
She's a tiny old lady.
Yeah, but I feel like if I even look at her, she's like, fuck off, you little shits.
Yeah, she'll throw something at you. It is in a Brisbane, so you never know what the old people will do. It's probably understandable. Okay, all good. Moving on to some car news. I have come across the car with the biggest grill to come out in 2022.
Is it the BMW XM?
No. It is the Lexus LX.
Oh, yeah. It's that
SUV. It's the big SUV thingy. I'm going to actually try and get up on my computer. I know you can't see it when you're listening, but if you search 2022 Lexus LS, you will come up with that.
Yeah, I saw when
it looks
they...
worse than silver, the light silver. Look at that. It's
a ladder.
It's a ladder. They've put a fucking ladder on the front of their... I know it's hard to get up on some of those SUVs to clean your windscreen, but that's taking it too far.
Because, yeah, I've seen the pictures when they were first sort of planning to release it, so I've already seen it.
Yeah, yeah.
But isn't it just like a... Was it Kluger?
Toyota? Yeah, it's a Kluger underneath. Yeah, it's a Toyota Kluger underneath. It's just been jazzed up with a brand new front. But everyone's reviewed it, and some of the reviews are like, oh, the front's not as bad as what it looks like. I'm like, what do you mean it's not? A tradie would love that car because his ladder's on the front. You don't need to put it on the roof.
Yeah.
You're driving around with a ladder on the front of your car. Sorry, but it's just a ladder.
I hope they don't do that because, you know, Lexus have had that design of, so with some of the other SUVs, they've used the same grille that they've had on, like, their RCFs and stuff.
Yep. Yeah.
Which, apparently, that was controversial, but at least that looks like a grille and not this. Yeah. I hope they don't go putting this in on their RCFs and stuff.
I hope not. Like, even the wheel arches, the squared off wheel arches, not having round wheel arches, looks stupid. The whole thing is stupid.
It looks like that they got a picture of just sort of a normal Lexus SUV. Mm. They put it in MS Paint and they stretched it all the way up.
Yeah.
It looks...
Yeah, it's just been stretched. It's like it probably originally had a short grille and they've just like literally just stretched the image to make it fit.
It looks really, really high up, but then it looks really squished from the sides. It just doesn't look right.
There's a lot happening at the top and there's a lot happening at the bottom and then there's fucking nothing in the middle. Like it's just horrendous. It's horrendous, but it's currently winning my award for the biggest grille of 2022.
Yeah.
So we'll see if that, see if anyone can outdo that. BMW will give it a whirl, no doubt, but that's freaking the only one to have a ladder that I've seen. On to other news. In the car world, Queensland are now offering a $3,000 rebate if you buy an electric vehicle under 58 grand.
What?
So most states and stuff have had electric vehicle rebates, trying to get people to buy electric cars. Right. Queensland's now joined in on that, as most states have, and they're offering a $3,000 rebate. So if you've gone and buy a new electric vehicle, that's worth less than 58 grand, they will give you $3,000 back.
Wow.
Yeah. So there's some of the range, it includes like the MG ZS, which I don't like. Don't buy the MG ZS. It's cheap, and it's cheap for a reason. The BYD Atto 3.
Oh, yeah.
And I learnt what BYD stands for.
What?
Build Your Dream.
What?
That's what it stands for. Build Your Dream. BYD. The brand BYD, Chinese brand, stands for Build Your Dream.
I think it stands for something Chinese, but they've decided to say that for the English market.
Probably. It's probably like rice and noodles. Or something.
That's racist.
It's not racist. They cultures live for rice and noodles. I can't see why they wouldn't want to call their car.
That'd be like BMW stands for bacon,
mayo and
bacon, mayo and watermelon.
Well, wouldn't it? They are Germans. They do like some weird food. It could be bratwurst.
Bratwurst.
Let's see, metwurst.
What's that?
And worst.
I mean,
just different types of German sausage.
Yeah.
Anyway, never mind. Aside from that, there's the two Hyundais you can get. So the Ionic, whatever the fucking hell that is, and the Kona. And apparently the news article said you could get the Mini. However, the Mini, when you go and check the pricing of it, is 61 grand. It's not less than 58. So I don't think.
And that's MSRP, isn't it?
Yeah.
Should be more than that.
Yeah.
Still.
Yeah. The Tesla doesn't qualify because it's like 68.
Yeah.
It's way expensive. And the Leaf does, but only just, and you have to get a base model.
Yeah.
Which is what I'd end up going for anyway. I'd go for the, if I get the Leaf under 58 and I had to go to an electric car just to get around, I'd go the Leaf. I'd go it over any of the others and always will. The others are ass and they are no good. So... The Leaf, the Nissan Leaf, is by far the better one of those. Anyway, that's the end of car news. There's plenty of other things going on, but it's all largely rubbish, and it's all based around everyone's charging more for cars these days.
Yeah.
including the Corolla. Corolla's now $28,000.
Jeez.
For a Corolla.
Better be a fucking...
That's not even crazy. A sporty one. It's not even a sporty one. It's the bog standard one.
Yeah.
The price is going through the roof. That's not a good deal. That is like your depreciation on that is gonna it'll plummet and you'll have nothing after you pay the car off.
Yeah.
It's just ridiculous. Onto gaming, some gaming news. So the GT7 strife has been resolved. So their servers went down. Due apparently to a piece in the update that could wipe people's data.
I think that's an excuse.
I think it's an excuse too. But they reckon they had to take the servers offline until they fixed it, and they reckon they've fixed it. I reckon what's happened is everyone said you've screwed it with all the reduction in the payout and forcing everyone to microtransactions.
Full on microtransactions. Yeah.
So if you don't freaking fix it, well, it's a problem. I think they've tried to, but it seems there was some updates that were worthwhile. There were some parts in some of the missions where they had the wrong tires on the cars and stuff like that. Normal buggy stuff that they've fixed up. But it's now back online. Apparently, it's all good. They're not focusing on microtransactions. Don't be afraid, people.
No, they are.
They are. They are. And that's PlayStation. That's PlayStation as a whole in a lot of their stuff.
Sony can either make a really, really good game or a really, really shit game.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're going to make Gran Turismo probably shit.
Yeah, well, they're going to make it shit through their choices, not through the game itself. And that's normally what they do.
Yeah.
The choices they make with the game's release and the content is normally what screws it for Sony. Because they try and charge too much for the DLC, or there's too much DLC and there's not enough in-game. And
why the fuck do you need the game by itself to be online? Like, you're playing it by yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
Why is it still online? Why do we need servers?
I have no idea why the normal campaign element needs to be online.
Yeah.
No idea why. I know you get people saying yes, but it's, you know, part of it's on fucking the server and it makes it quicker and better. And no. Like, you can buy digital copies now. Make the fucking thing as big as you want. It doesn't need to fit on a disc anymore.
Yeah.
Right, and even if you do fit it on a disc, once the person puts a disc in, it'll normally go online and get all the updates anyway. So you don't need this. You shouldn't need reliance on being online all the time. I don't think it's necessary. But
it's annoying.
It's incredibly annoying, especially when it goes down for bloody 28 hours or something.
Yeah,
like that's just not cool. And I know there was some earthquakes in Japan, and I feel sorry for the people who lost their lives and stuff in those earthquakes in Japan. I hope everyone's okay. But you, as a big corporation like Sony and like the guys that make Gran Turismo, they should have server backup. They should have backups to those things. You can't just base everything in one spot anymore.
Yeah.
It's why Google has thousands of fucking Google factories those big warehouses that hold all the servers and data. They know you can't have it in one spot. They have it spread over everywhere.
Yeah.
I don't get it. But anyway, on to other news. This is a bit of Steam news that I found.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Have you heard of Core Keeper?
No.
Okay, Core Keeper is like a cross between Stardew Valley, Terraria, and Valheim, whatever Valheim is.
Uh-huh.
Don't know what Valheim is. Not a clue.
Yeah, neither.
Anyway, it's a new game out on Steam. It's currently in beta, but it'll be going out pretty soon, and they've got it on sale price. Apparently, it's relatively good. It's a big cross-up, you know, survival sort of, you know, I don't know, pixelated world, I don't know.
8-bit sort of game. What's sort it called?
It's called Core Keeper, so Core, C-O-R-E, and Keeper. I didn't read much in the article because I thought you might have known something about it, so I didn't actually prepare for it. I just seen it and that it was coming out. Apparently it's
good. I reckon Ethan would like that.
Yeah, it seems like that. It's sort of a bit cartoony. It's sort of a bit...
yeah, he likes the
8-bit
games.
Yeah.
That's pretty right. Is it made by the people who made...
I'm not sure who's... I'm not sure who it's made by. I would have to look that up. That's a good question. I don't know. But it seems pretty good.
Yeah.
Cheap.
13... USD, $280.
Yeah, it's going to be, what, $20? Less than $20?
17.
Yeah.
50.
Yeah.
That's not too bad. That's not too bad. A fun game. I could probably run it.
Yeah.
On my shitty laptop.
On your shitty laptop. It should work. It's 8-bit. So, yeah, give it a whirl. Core Keeper is out there. On to space news. Most people wouldn't realize that the International Space Station, the way to get to the space station and back again as an astronaut or a cosmonaut, if you're Russian, is on a Russian rocket.
Oh.
It's the only way.
Yeah.
So there is a US guy up there at the moment that they're trying to figure out how they get him home, because he's on rotation to come home. They've sent up 3 Russian astronauts, but they're not sending up any American ones. Not because they're worried that the fucking thing's going to blow up, they're going to be kidnapped. It's the whole political pressure and the political impact that comes from that, because they land in Kazakhstan. So when the little module comes down, right, and they crash back down to land, the module lands in Kazakhstan. And yeah, then they're picked up and taken normally to Russia, where they're processed and put through, and the American guy comes home. So they got assurances from the space agency and everything that's going to happen, as it should. Not a problem at all. I think the Yanks aren't quite social.
No.
So they're currently looking at other options within the EU to fund some rockets, because NASA don't have them. They don't have rockets to go to the space station at the moment.
Yeah.
And SpaceX can send modules up there for food and wares, but that's about it. So not really anything else at all. So be interesting to see how that plays out over the course of the conflicts currently underway.
I hope that they can take him down from there, and there's war with Ukraine, but this guy's got nothing to do with him. Just bring him down and send him back home.
Yeah. I think they will eventually. I think it's no one trusts anyone at the moment.
Yeah.
Putin's own people don't trust him. See the picture from the other day with Putin sitting in his fucking minister's briefing or cabinet briefing or something?
Oh, yeah.
And he's at one end of the table and they're at the other end. Did you see that one?
Oh, no, I saw another one, and he had a woman sitting next to him, and it's like, people are like, it's a green screen. He's in his fucking bunker.
Yeah. They had like this picture of a cabinet meeting, and I don't know if it's current or if it's old or anything. I can't tell with the internet, but it was him sitting at this end of this fucking long table, and all these other people all the way down the other end.
Yeah.
So it's either they don't trust him or he doesn't trust them.
Yeah.
They don't even trust their own people. Anyway, we'll see how that all works out. On to my tips for young bucks. Now, there will be a warning at the beginning of this, and if you have heard the warning and you are still here, be mindful of that warning. So, because today we are going to talk about addiction.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Tricky concept. More importantly, what I want to talk about is that in school, and when you go and do different things and you go through life, everyone refers to, they talk about addiction, they talk about smoking and drugs and alcohol. There's more. Addiction is just not that simple, right? You can become addicted to a lot of things. Become addicted to social media, you can become addicted to playing games, which I'm not at the moment because the fucking thing pisses me off, but you could do. Addiction is more than just smoking or drugs or alcohol.
And even in this day and age, that whole, drugs and alcohol and stuff, it's not as rampant as it was in, the 90s or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just a lot more, I guess, social media now.
It's more social media. It's going away from those old conventional things and is becoming more broad. What I wanted to really impart on people and younger people is to know your triggers, because addiction is really easy to set in, and there is always a very fine line between addiction and habit, right? You can have good habits and bad habits. You should have more good ones than bad ones, right? Good habits would be exercising daily, eating and drinking healthily, stuff like that. They're good habits to do on a repeat basis. Get enough sleep, which you do on the weekends.
Yeah.
So those are good habits, but you can also have many, many bad habits, and sometimes bad habits, a lot of small ones, can create big problems. So, I remember when I was younger, in some of the places I worked, when I didn't want to go to work, I just took a sick day. I just chuck a sickie.
Yeah.
And it almost became like every fortnight I was chucking a sickie, even when I wasn't sick.
Yeah.
And it seems, minuscule in the grand scheme of things, but it can become a bad habit. They can impact you eventually, your job, if you go down that path. So it is important to understand your triggers, because all habits, all addictions will have triggers. So you take the good old smoking as a factor. You know, the trigger for that is you want to freak another one, because your brain is hooked on the nicotine. It's hooked on it. And sometimes those triggers are also social. So you might not smoke all the time, but you might smoke socially, because when you get into a social setting at a pub or out with friends or whatever, you might then smoke, right? And that can then lead to a dependency on it if you do it regularly enough, and that can lead to a bad habit. Recognizing the triggers is key into reframing those triggers to doing something else. So the best thing to do when you have a trigger that leads you down a bad habit or a bad addiction path, right, is to recognize a trigger and do something else with it. So if you know, you know, when you get triggered by needing to, what's a good example? Really good example. When I was driving trucks, I was pretty well freaking hooked on Coke and energy drinks.
Yeah.
Like pretty well, right? I was like everyone else. I'd go into the freaking, into the shop or the servo. I'd go straight to where the Coke and Red Bull is. I'd get freaking several big bottles of all of them, the biggest ones you could get, because they're always on special, because you can buy free for nothing, right? They're always on special.
Yeah.
Get those, get into the truck, get about an hour down the road and go, why the fuck am I drinking this? And then get to the next place and do it all over again.
Yeah.
So what I did with that is I knew my trigger was go in, get drinks. So I started to replace the energy drink and then the Coke with other things that weren't quite so bad. So like iced teas, milk. It's not a good idea if you're driving 8 hours in the truck to have too much milk. But anyway, wind windows down, it's all good. And then eventually to water.
Yeah.
And moved away from it. So I didn't try and go freaking cold turkey. What I did was recognize the trigger, and instead of going for where the fridge was that had all those things in it, I went to a different one.
Yeah.
And I got other things. And didn't even go past that other fridge. I get those other things in like a completely different way, halfway around the freaking shop, to go and get the other things I need to leave and eat and go. So that's an example of recognizing the trigger and doing something different with it. And by doing that, you're still using the trigger and you're still using that motive, but you're using it in a way that is going to have less impact on you from a health perspective.
Yeah.
This is really, really important, because there are many different types of addictions and you don't want to end up addicted to stuff that you can't get away from.
Yeah.
Right. You don't want to be addicted to smoking or vaping, because vaping's not like you're just having fucking fruit juice in a fucking smoke, right? It's fucking bad for you. The same with, you know, becoming addicted and dependent on things like alcohol.
Yeah.
Right. There's a difference between enjoying a drink and having a drink after you've done a lot of hard work and being dependent on it. And the tell of being dependent on it is if you can't have a day off from it voluntarily. So if you can't voluntarily go, I'm not going to have anything, then you have a problem. Yeah. If you have to have something, it's a problem and you need to work that problem out, because it will never get better. It will only get worse. So all those things like that, drugs is just like that, right? But the dependency on drugs becomes quite more extreme and much harder to get away from, and can lead to further things, because you become so dependent on it, you start chasing other fixes in drugs and you end up with fucking real nasty shit in your veins.
Yeah.
That can kill you. Right, there are no good drugs. Right, even weed has a bad impact, and whilst it can help people with certain medical conditions and help people with, you know, certain mental conditions and stuff like that, that's in a controlled way with support from a medical professional.
Yeah.
That's not rolling a joint on a Saturday night. Right. It's not the fucking same. Even if your friend went to fucking 2 weeks of university as a fucking psychologist, still not the same. Right. Still not a medical professional. Still not a controlled dosage. You're just having a joint. So that, if that's left unchecked, it can get worse and worse and worse to you know, weed doesn't provide the fix anymore, you need to move on to something heavier and harder. And you start to get into those really heavy illicit drugs that are just full of fucking chemicals you get under your sink.
Yeah.
Right? They are shit and they will destroy someone. So managing addictions is incredibly, incredibly important, because at some point in your life, you're likely, you're almost going to become addicted to something. Right? All of us will. Human beings, you know, our brain craves what it craves. The likelihood of you becoming addicted to something or forming a habit on something will happen. What you need to do is be mindful of the triggers, so those things you become addicted to are good things, not fucking bad things.
Yeah.
It is so important, and I've seen so many people's lives turn to shit because they haven't recognized the trigger and they've done nothing to stop it. I've seen marriages fall apart. I've seen people lose their lives. I've seen everything that can come from all of these things. And, you know, I've had a mate who lost his life because he was addicted to alcohol.
Yeah.
Right? And not just fucking one or two, like heaps, you know, drinking from fucking midday type shit, right?
Yeah.
Bad. I've seen marriages fall apart because guys have been so fucking addicted to gaming that they haven't turned around to see their wife and children walking out the door.
Yeah.
Right. You can still have things you enjoy, but when they become something that controls you, then you need to do something about it. And the earlier you can recognize your triggers, the better chance you've got of actually managing that. So that's the tip spit over. As I said, there was a warning at the beginning, and if you listen through when you shouldn't have, go and speak to your parents. If you haven't got any parents, then you should already know what to do by now. Anyway, on to some other stuff. On to my Stoic quote. So we're back to normal Stoics now. So we're back to Marcus Aurelius. And the quote that I like of his at the moment is very, very simple. It is this: the best revenge is to not be like your enemy. That's it.
What does that mean?
So, we all know what getting revenge is like, right? You can get revenge on people. I do in most races. I go in when someone tries to bump me out of the way. The next corner, they're going into the weeds.
Yeah.
Like straight up, straight in the weeds. That makes me like my enemy, because my enemy's just tried to turf me, and I'm going to retaliate and be just like them.
Yeah.
It's not really satisfying revenge. So, the best revenge is to not be like your enemy. And you'll always have enemies throughout life. We all will. At some point or the other, we might not call them enemies. We might just call them people we hate. We might just call them the C word. Still enemies. But not being like them is the best revenge. So if they are an ass and an arrogant person and just a toxic, filthy individual, going to their level to get revenge on them or get back at them or being like them isn't good. It's not what you want to do.
Yeah.
Right. You know, we always hear, you know, take the high path and, you know, be the good moral person. There's value in that. Right. Because the basis of it is a shit human being will always be a shit human being. If you go down to their level, then you're just one of them. It's as simple as that. You stay up and above it and you go and do the best you can despite them. Then you're going to be better for yourself.
Yeah.
They will still be shit human being 10 years down the line, and you will not. And that is the best revenge, is to not be like them.
Yeah.
That's the basis of that quote. Alrighty. On to Australia's prime ministers. So this prime minister, probably one of our more better known prime ministers that most people would reasonably know, is Robert Menzies.
I don't know him.
Ah, God. See, this is why I do this session. This is why I do it.
I haven't learnt about any prime minister in all my time at school.
Well, that's why we're doing this, so we can learn about prime ministers. So, Robert Menzies, born in 1894 to Australian-born parents, making him the first prime minister to have both parents born in Australia.
Haven't we already had that?
No, we've had prime ministers where they've had one parent born in Australia.
Oh.
We've had several of those. This is having two. So both parents as Australian born. So it took to, you know, 1940 something, 1939.
So not really getting any more people from like Scotland or anything now?
Not sure. I wouldn't say no. I don't know where ScoMo's from. Antarctica? I don't know. I'm not sure, but he's he had Australian-born parents. So his family were largely involved in politics at both state and federal level. He had his father and an uncle were in state politics. Another uncle was in federal politics. Menzies was incredibly well-educated. He won many scholarships throughout his high school time in private schools and when he was in university studying law.
Yeah.
So he is he's one of these highly accomplished people throughout his early life. He served with the Melbourne University Rifles during World War One, which was an Australian volunteer corps, effectively. Yeah. Just a bunch of uni students with some old 303s shooting at tin cans. He couldn't shoot. Terrible shot. They made him a second lieutenant or something or other. But he didn't volunteer for overseas service. Now, the reasons for that are varied, but the family opinion was that his other two brothers had volunteered for overseas service and did serve overseas, and the family didn't want all their sons committing to overseas war.
Yeah.
Because what happened during that time was all the sons committed to overseas war and died in conflict, because it was a horrible conflict in World War II, and there was no sons left.
Or like Singapore, that thing.
Well, a lot of these guys went and, this is World War II.
Yeah.
So, a lot of them went and fought throughout, parts of Southeast Asia. A lot of them went to Europe, South Africa, fought all over the place. And many of them didn't come home.
Yeah.
Many of them didn't come home. So, their family effectively decided that they wanted to keep one home. And, Robert, who was learning to be a lawyer, was the best option out of those to sort of keep home.
Yeah.
So he didn't sign up for overseas service. He became a lawyer in 1918 and started his own practice. So he went through university, got his law degree, became a lawyer. He held office in the Victorian Parliament from 1828 to 1834. So, he served a fair bit of time there. He was deputy premier and held a few cabinet posts there. In 1934, he left state politics to run for federal politics and got in and became part of Lyons's party. He was sworn in on April 18th, 1939, as Prime Minister, following Lyons' passing. So we had that period where we had other old mate from last week who was just filling in. This was the successor. So Robert Menzies was put in as the successor.
Yeah.
And became Prime Minister. He won the 1940 election as well, which I think I get to later anyway. On September 3 of 1939, Britain and France declared war with Germany.
Yeah.
Following Germany's invasion of Poland. At the time, Menzies followed and made a speech to the peoples. And I have that speech that he made to the Australian people. And I think I'm going to read it. I'm going to try to anyway. I can't say it in his way of saying it. I'm just going to say it in mine. And it is this. It says, "Fellow Australians, it is my melancholy duty to inform you officially that in consequence of the persistence of Germany in her invasion of Poland, Great Britain has declared war upon her, and that, as a result, Australia is also at war. No harder task can fall to the lot of a democratic leader than to make sure an announcement." Can't read that properly. Anyway, that's what it is. "Great Britain and France, with the cooperation of the British Dominions, have struggled to avoid this tragedy. They have, as I firmly believe, been patient. They have kept the door of negotiations open. They have given no choice for aggression. But in the result, their efforts have failed, and we are, therefore, as a great family of nations, involved in a struggle which we must at all costs win. and which we believe in our hearts we will win. It is plain, indeed it is brutally plain, that the Hitler ambition has been, not as he has once said, to unite the German peoples under one rule, but to bring under that rule as many European countries, even of alien race, as can be subdued by force. If such a policy was allowed to go unchecked, there would be no security, in Europe, and there would be no just peace for the world. A halt has been called. Force has had to be resorted to check the march of force. Hesitant dealing, the peaceful adjustment of differences, the rights of independent peoples to have their own lives, the honouring of international obligations and promises, all these things are at stake. There is never any doubt as to where Great Britain stood in relation to them. There can be no doubt that where Great Britain stands, there stand the people of the entire British world. Bitter as we all feel about this wanton crime, there is not a moment for rhetoric. Prompt as the action of many thousands must be, it is for the best of the moment, for quiet thinking, for the calm fortitude which rests upon the beating of drums, but upon the unconquerable spirit of man, created by God in his own image. What may be before us, we do not know, nor know how long the journey. But this we must know. But this we do know, that truth is our companion on the journey. The truth is with us in the battle, and that truth must win. Before I end, I may say this to you. In the bitter months that are to come, calmness, resoluteness, confidence, and hard work will be required as never before. This war will involve not only soldiers and sailors and airmen, but suppliers, foodstuffs, money, our staying power, and particularly the staying power of the mother country, and will be best assisted by keeping our production going, by continuing our avocations and our business as fully as we can, by maintaining employment and with it our strength. I hope that in spite of the emotions we are feeling, it will show that Australia is ready to see it through. May God in his mercy and compassion grant that the world may soon be delivered from this agony.
That's long.
It's a long speech. It's a long speech, and it's written in a time when words were a little different. But at the time, I think he needed just to show leadership and to calm everyone down and get everyone focused on the job. In the background, in the politics of that, there was a lot of discussion and arguments. You know, everyone was saying, we're all going to be on the same side, all the parties will do what needs to be done to protect Australia. But the commitment wasn't to protect Australia at the beginning. The commitment was to take on Germany.
Yeah.
Australia wasn't at risk from Germany at that point in time. So it was a lot in politics that was saying, well, we committed to protecting Australia. Australia's not at risk.
Until Japan came along.
Until Japan came along, and he was always worried about Japan. So following that speech was the 1940 election, which he won as a minority government. So it was a hung parliament. But he got support of the independents to form a majority, and things continued on. In January of 1941, Menzies went to England for 4 months and discussed war strategy and stuff like that. Along the way, he stopped in South Africa to visit troops and went to Britain, which was quite common at that time.
Yeah. I was just like 4 months to just talk about some stuff.
Well, it'd probably take a month to get there. It probably took a fair while to get there, a fair while to get back.
They had planes in the 40s, didn't they?
Yeah, they did, but they didn't. They're not long range.
Yeah.
Big long range things. But while over there, there was many discussions and beliefs that he should replace Churchill.
Oh.
Mainly because Menzies had probably slightly better tact, and he was a bit more, you know, able to work politics than what Churchill was. Yeah. It didn't happen, obviously. Churchill retained his position and remained, and I think Churchill would have been much better than Menzies through the full length of the war.
Yeah.
I think that ability to manage politics would have started to wane after a while throughout the life of that war, especially with the attacks on Britain and stuff like that. I think, you know, Churchill was the only man for that job. On returning home, he found that his party members no longer supported him.
Oh.
So the whole fucking, they did all turn the fucking shit in his absence, which happens when some prime ministers go overseas for periods of time. They come back and the fucking weasels in the background can influence things and how they say and whatnot. So he offered to resign. He's like, I'll resign. Had enough of them. They wanted him to try and get the support of the opposition. So they've been trying to get the support of the opposition to do a national unity government. So basically not opposing houses during the war. It's everyone pushing for the same cause.
Yeah.
Naturally, the opposition really didn't want that because their commitment was to Australia and not to a world war.
Yeah.
So they didn't support it. They didn't go his way. So as a result, Menzies stood down from Prime Minister on August 21, 1941.
He wasn't there for very long.
He's there for about 2 years, 2 and a bit years.
Yeah.
Influential in the beginning of the war. Really influential in getting things moving and getting things to happen at the beginning of the war. But only couldn't stay on because of his own freaking party, his own people. So many times we've seen in a lot of these recent prime ministers, the reason they fall is not for anything else other than their own people.
Yeah.
Their own parties bringing about their destruction, and Menzies' destruction came about the result of his own people.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a shame. You know, to me, he's one of the iconic prime ministers because, you know, he had to give that speech. He had to commit his nation to war.
Yeah.
You know, and that's a very big step to take as a leader, is to commit your nation. So, yeah, that's him.
There for very long, unfortunately.
No, and he wasn't, you know, it wasn't like some of the other prime ministers where there was heaps of legislation they put in place and they fucking formulated all sorts of stuff.
We're kind of past that time already, though.
We're sort of past that time already. You know, acts from then, you know, various acts come in and go, but not to the rate that they did in the beginning.
Yeah.
Not like fucking 30 of them, you know. it's much slower now, and a lot of this stuff leading into the war was, you know, basically mobilizing for war.
Yeah.
Which he did quite well. And yeah, I think if he wasn't friggin' sabotaged by his own party, he probably would have stayed in for a lot longer.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's just what they did. Next week we move on to a prime minister that only stays there for a short period of time. I think 39 days or something.
We have like 3 prime ministers, 4 prime ministers in World War II.
Yeah, yeah. Alone. Yeah. And that just shows the division amongst politics and the division in the country.
Yeah.
In going to war, it's much easier to have unity in somewhere like the UK, where, you know, freaking Germany's within short range of where you are. A little plane can fly from England to Germany.
Yeah.
Much closer to home. But when you're all the way in a different hemisphere on the opposite side of the freaking world.
It's like, do we look after ourselves or do we go and help?
Yeah.
And do at that time, they didn't know about Japan, did they?
Well, I don't think they knew about them. He considered them a risk, Japan to be a risk. But there was no, at that point in time, you know, Japan wasn't fucking down fighting everywhere.
Yeah,
I think there was still some resentment following World War One and how people were treated at in the end of World War One and the impacts of that.
Yeah,
and that resentment remained because if you think about it, you know, your guys that were in your 20s going over for World War One, they're now in their 50s. You know, their sons or their grandsons are now going to war.
Yeah,
and it's still fresh in their mind. You know, so they would not want that to They would not want that to be happening. They know what it feels like. So, yeah. So that was that, and that is the end of Robert Menzies. He doesn't return after that. That's his shining moment for a couple of years, and
he made a speech, and that's about it.
He made a speech. He went to the UK. He helped with getting the war underway, and that was it.
Yeah.
So, that's everything I've got. I don't have any more. Have anything else?
No. Discussion. We have anything else to say?
No. I just gotta get my app thingy up here. Who are we up to? No, it's not a bad one. It's about 45 minutes.
A little bit shorter.
A little bit shorter, but that's okay. You can do short ones and long ones.
Yeah.
It's not a problem at all. All right. Well, next week I'll try and make sure that Aiden's had more sleep and he's up earlier so he can be more inclined on the podcast. and I probably won't do so much yard work, so I'm not sore and tired myself. Anyway, don't forget to listen to my SoundCloud. Final plug, sponsors the SoundCloud. And we'll probably see you all again next week. Goodbye.
Goodbye.